Hello, welcome to Outdoors in Scotland. I'm John Burns, and this is my podcast for people who like the outdoors in Scotland or anywhere else for that matter. My guest today comes from Sheffield, I think that's right, that area, and her book, Running Through the Dark, talks a lot about that area. I spent a few happy years in living in Sheffield, where I was able to go out and learn to climb very badly on the gritstone edges. And in many ways it's the outdoor capital of Britain, I feel, that area. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to revisit that. So introducing today the ultra runner, Jen Scotney. Hello, Jen, how are you?
Hi, John. I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, did I get any of that right? Do you actually live in Sheffield?
No, I've never lived in Sheffield. Right, I am okay. Born and bred in the Peak District.
Okay. Well, that's my first mistake.
Yes. I had a very idyllic childhood growing up in a little place, kind of on the outs, just a few miles out of Matlock. That was my little stomping ground when I was young.
And it's a great area, the Peak District, isn't it? It's got the rolling hills. It's also got a lot of opportunities for rock climbing and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I was never really... I mean, I did dabble in a bit of climbing when I moved back. But as a child... I mean, as a teenager, it became the most boring place ever. Because yes. There was no taxis or buses or anything. And I couldn't wait to get off to uni to move to the cities. Yeah. But as soon as I got to Leeds, I was very homesick for those hills and views and came to really appreciate what I had as a child.
Right. Often you do in retrospect, don't you? For those who don't know, and I guess I count myself amongst them, really, what is ultra running?
Yeah, it came to me later in life as well. I mean, when I was growing up, my dad was a fell runner and I used to see him in fell races, but also maybe once a year he'd do a road marathon and then swear that he would never do one again and then do one again. And so that was really my experience of running. My mum also ran half marathons and both my parents used to run just as a hobby. And then I just completely got out of sports. I played a bit at university, kind of football was my thing. But after that, when I was working as a lawyer in London, I just did nothing.
Right.
And then I came back to the Peak District to live. So that would have been about 15 years ago. And that's really where I started getting back into running. And then I discovered ultra running. So ultra running is really just anything other than a marathon. So just going longer. And it can be like my first ultra marathon was 50K, so 30-ish miles around the Peak District, actually, just on my home turf. But then it can be anything longer and longer. So my longest ultra marathon I did was running the coast to coast. That was 190 miles.
Right, that's a fair run. And from what I understand, you do this in a continuous run and you're catching a little bit of sleep along the way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's how I did it. I mean, my husband Marcus is more into his multi-day races. So things like Dragon's Back and Cape Wrath, where you've only got a set amount to run each day and then you can recover at camp and things. But I found that I really did like the continuous ones. I probably wouldn't have sleep on the first night, but going into the second night, yeah, definitely try and catch a nap.
Right. And what drew you to the experience in a way? I mean, it sounds like a sort of journey into a different world. That kind of a run. Does that make sense to you? There's a lot of freedom and also a lot of suffering by the sound of it too.
I never really bought into the suffering. I had a really good time running. And yeah, I think the suffering's a choice. For me, it was at first just that curiosity of how far can I run? I think because I'd seen my dad run these road marathons and be really suffering and not being able to walk downstairs.
Yeah.
I didn't really I didn't really question that you could go further. That seemed to be the limit for me, just these marathons. Almost like that's why the marathon is such an odd distance. That's the furthest that a human can run. Right. And so when I started, it was a real curiosity of, oh my God, my body just did that. And then I did the High Peak 40, so 40 miles. And then I think I did a 12-hour race, so getting up to 100K. And there's something really fun about being on that start line of the 100-mile races. So I did the Spine Challenger, which is the first 108 miles of the Pennine Way. I've done that three times. So you stood there, you're not sure what's going to happen in the race. It's felt like a real adventure. You don't even, you know, when I did that 190-mile one, I didn't even know what day I was going to finish on. And so it was a lot of fun to do those. And I'd also say that this isn't, like, with hindsight, not very healthy, but I was working as a human rights barrister at the time and was working really, really long hours. And for me, running was that escape from my work and my desk and my responsibilities. And when I was out doing these races and long runs, I wasn't checking emails and I wasn't getting pestered. So there was definitely a little bit of escapism from work for me.
I mean, your book is a very personal book. It talks about a lot of the challenges you faced as well. I think am I right in saying you started out as a lawyer in London, and then you decided to move away from that? Is that right?
Yeah, I started. I was called to the bar 2005, I think. So I'd done like 5 years at university, and right. I went down to London for a few years. And just that's when I really got out of exercise. Yeah. I was just working really long hours. I would relax working, but with a glass of wine in my hand. And so it really was quite an unhealthy lifestyle. Yeah. I did move back to Manchester and was still working as a lawyer. And that's really when I started getting out walking, and I wasn't running at that point, but I started walking, and suddenly my holidays were more like going to the Lake District, ticking off the Wainwrights. I had some trips to Scotland, and that's really then when I started thinking about moving back to the Peak District. So my partner at the time was working in Sheffield, and so it worked out location wise but it also meant that I wasn't driving out, because quite often from Manchester on a Saturday or Sunday, I'd be driving to Lady Bower and the Peak District and doing walks there. So, yeah, I moved back to the Peak District, but I was still working as a lawyer for probably another 10 years, but I was working from home. So I set up my office and just had to travel out for my cases.
So running was an escape for you, really, a sort of a way of finding a sort of relief from the kind of pressure?
Yeah, relief from the pressure of work. But also when I started running, this was not long after my dad and my brother had died. They both died quite close together. And it just made me look at my life. And although I'd moved to the Peak District, I was still just working really long hours. I would get up, have breakfast, I'd be at my desk, and then often at my desk for 14 plus hours. Right. And so it was actually buying a house, getting a dog that really started on that more regular getting outside. So every day I'd have to take my dog out. And then I started just running some of the really short sections on those walks. So yeah. I used to do one like under Kerber Edge. I just started running. I didn't have any running gear. I was still in like walking shoes. And and it just was that release and help me start to process the grief as well, I think.
Yeah, I think when you run, you tend to, it's you're running, but there's also opportunity, if you like, for some sort of internal dialogue. It allows you to think, because all you're doing is running. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, it has. And I think maybe that's where the suffering comes in that we're talking about. You know, I've had other people talk about this suffering in ultramarathons and how it really breaks you down to your core and you find out who you are. It sounds like such a really kind of, painful experience. For me, it's just been a lot more fun than that. But there were definitely times where away from my desk where I was trying to be this perfect lawyer, and I was also in a relationship that wasn't really working at the time and trying to be perfect in that. I think the running, just being out in nature, I could let down all those masks and just really feel what was happening. And sometimes I would be running through that, particularly under those, in those woods under Kerber Edge, and I would just be crying. I'd just sit on a log and cry. And that's actually what I needed, because I didn't really have that space to do that in my home life at the time, or didn't think that I did. It really got me out. It also, I think, really grounded me, just seeing the light change, the seasons change. It really put me in touch with that world that I'd become quite disconnected from. So I think that was a big part in running and what it gave me.
Right. I can understand that it was an escape or a retreat in some ways. But your book is called Running Through the Dark. And it certainly sounds as though you've run through some dark phases in your life, but also it's called The Rise and Fall of an Ultra Runner. And I think you've had problems more recently with your health, which has had a fairly profound effect on your life. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's hard to talk about the book without giving it away, but I think that anyone that's followed me kind of knows that I am not running anymore. And right. I moved away from the Peak District and live in the Scottish Highlands now. But running gave me so much, and it really took me through the processing the grief, but also it gave me such self-confidence and real kind of self-love, self-worth. But what the book explores from that rise is how running and just physical sport, because it became that I couldn't do anything, when that's taken away, it becomes really fragile to have your self-worth or my self-worth built on that running and results. And so running became so much of my identity. It was, you know, everything that I talked about, I posted about, it's where I got so much enjoyment and social side of it from. Yeah. I also stopped being a lawyer. I was a running coach. So it became such a huge part of my life. But what the book looks at is when that's taken away, what's left. And that was a very messy process, as you can tell from the book. So it's taken a lot of work and time to work out who I am without the running as well.
I mean, obviously you've suffered from fatigue as well. I mean, ME. And you were still running at the time. Is that right?
In patches. So there were plenty of races I didn't start because I had chronic fatigue syndrome, and I then was dealing with that. So that would take a lot of rest, like months rest. I was bedbound at times. Right. And part of that was I also hid that. I didn't really talk about that, partly because for some of that period I was employed and I didn't really want people that I worked with knowing. But also I think I was a bit ashamed of seeing this illness as a weakness. So yeah. I hid a lot of that. I think, you know, it was really only my partner Marcus that saw how bad things had got. And so there were definitely times I couldn't run. And then for me, I caught a cold one Easter in 2019, and it took me 2.5 years to recover from that, the symptoms, and really had to learn how to walk again. And I try and get out when I can, because it wasn't making me worse, the little bits that I was doing, but it also wasn't like I could train or race or anything like that.
And I mean, as you say, you know, when you're involved to the degree that you were in ultra running, all your friends presumably were runners, and you knew and what you thought about. Have you found something that you can put in place of that, or is that something you're still struggling with?
I still have times where I wish I could run. You know, I've had to, like, even just the weekend gone, my husband was racing Devil of the Highlands race, and I'm crewing him, and I'd give anything to be able to run some days. Mm-hmm. I think when I was first told that I would never run again, I thought, oh, it's okay, I'll switch to cycling. I'll do these big cycling events. I can cycle for days and replace it in that way. But for me, partly my knees did not like the vibrations of cycling.
Right, that's something
that I'd have to build up to. So it was never going to be a switch to cycling. But I think also those years of illness really made me get a different perspective of actually, why am I doing these things? Why do I need to? And what I would say in terms of a replacement is actually just being really happy with the ordinary, which is kind of extraordinary, but really just, I don't need to push myself. I don't need to show anything. I don't need to prove anything, and just be very happy with my quite simple life that I've got nowadays, which is wandering across the field to the lock for a swim and maybe climbing a hill slowly and eat, there's no pressure to perform. There's nothing that I'm trying to achieve other than just to really enjoy the moment.
Yeah. Maybe you're not trying to escape from anything anymore. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a bit of a cliche that all ultra runners are trying to run away from something. And I think
I've not heard that one.
I mean, for me, maybe at the start I was trying to run away from the grief and the difficult feelings of the relationship, but I got to a place where I was pretty happy and running just because I really enjoy it and really love being out, and I love seeing the sunsets and the sunrises and the landscape. So I don't feel like I was particularly running to escape from everything, but I definitely feel like I don't need to step back into those races or challenges or anything like that.
Writing the book, I mean, it sounds a bit like the book was a journey in a way. It takes you, I've written obviously a few books and relived things, and sometimes writing a book is a process that brings about things that are fairly unexpected. Did you find that?
Yeah, the whole book was unexpected for me. I mean, I kind of feel like I accidentally wrote that book, but it was also, there wasn't another book that I could write. It's like the book that I needed to write. I mean, I set out, I was not going to be writing about myself. There's no way that I would have set out to write the book that's out. I set out to, so after my Coast to Coast run, I really felt drawn to the Pennine Way. It's a route that my mum and dad walked when they had children, and we used to hear their stories. I've got my dad's diary of it. I've seen, even got a photo album, and it just seemed really magical to me. And so after I'd run the Coast to Coast, which was in race conditions, so for most of the time I was very hungry and on my own, and I just thought actually it'd be quite fun to do this with support and friends and just see how fast I could run the Pennine Way. And at the time when I was thinking this, there wasn't any females that I could find had done it outside a spine race. And so that I set about really just looking for those females, because there were plenty of male records and previous records, and there were women that had helped crew and paced and like as in run with them, the males. So I was really interested in, were there any females that attempted it? Was there any records? Like there must be a fastest time that a woman's done it. So that's what I set out to look at. And I did some of the research was through like old journals, the Fell Running FRA magazine, the Rucksack Club, things like that. But I also started speaking to those runners, and some of them were getting quite elderly. And I just thought these stories aren't going to be around forever. I'd really like to collect them, which is that was the motivation for the book, was collecting stories from people that had run the Pennine Way. And then I was just going to pop up at the last chapter and run it and maybe do a chapter about, these are some of the training that I did. And it would be very just not personal. It would have been, these are what shoes I wore and this is how many bananas I ate and things like that. So that's what I I set out to write, and I started doing some of the interviews with old runners. And so but while I was starting to do that and starting to plan my training, I even had times where there were dates set that I was going to run my Pennine Way. I also had, as we've touched on, this illness that became very serious. I also had some injuries, other things. And I just found writing, most of it, there were times where I was so bad in bed that I couldn't write. So it wasn't like I was writing every day, but there were times where I felt like the only thing I could do was just write and really help me process things. But also it was that little place to put the conversations that I couldn't have, that I couldn't talk to people about, because when I was chronically ill, there's so many people that just didn't understand. They just thought I was a bit tired and I needed a bit of sleep. So that's when the writing started happening. And I also just found it really, really helpful to write. I write about my brother and my dad's death, because when I've had bereavements, people generally don't want to ask you about them, whether it's going to upset you or they're not upset them. So again, nobody really asks about my brother or my dad or what they were like or how they died. And so the book became a place to put all that. But at the time I just thought, well, this isn't what I set out to write. The publishers are not going to want this. So I'm safe, I can write anything. And so it's been very surprising that the book's actually coming out, because I never thought that anybody would read any of that. And largely, other than I did do an edit to just put a bit of structure in, because it was very much a brain dump of what was going on at times, other than that, it's largely unedited as well. The Pennine Way does feature in the book. I came to see it a bit like a character in there, because I did manage to go out and run most of it. I talk about my races on it, and I'm still really captivated by the Pennine Way and the landscape and just something so special about it. And I've just got such good memories. I mean, from what we've talked about, it sounds like the book's quite dark, and it is in places, and it's not a comfortable read. I mean, I was a bit shocked when I had to do the audiobook, because that was the first time that I really read it for 18 months or something like that. But I hope that the Pennine Way has a place on the book as well. And there's some really fun adventures that I've had going up to, like, staying in Greg's hut on Crossfell with my friend in the snow. And I hope that that comes across in the book too.
Great. So your book is available for pre-order right now, and it comes out on the 12th of September. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So this is the first interview that I've done, John, for my book. It really feels like stepping out into the unknown with this. Again, like, just thinking, I hadn't really expected this book. At every turn, I just thought, well, they're just going to say, no, we don't want such a personal book. Go back to, because I actually took out the interviews. So the interviews that I did with, like, Joss Naylor and some of the record holders, in the end, they just didn't really fit in with the book at the final part. So it is just, very personal. And so, it all comes out on the 12th of September.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you something you probably don't know, is that a book like yours, and it will have a life of its own, and in the sense that you've written about very personal things, and I think it will touch other people's lives in ways you don't expect. Are you sort of wondering how that will go?
Yeah, I think when I was writing, there's so much of it is about my chronic illness, and when I was first ill, this was before COVID and when we saw long COVID appearing, and so it was a very small number of people that were diagnosed with either chronic fatigue syndrome or ME, and it's a very dark and lonely place to be, because for me, once I got the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, it doesn't mean anything. It just means that I've got this unexplained fatigue.
Yeah.
That at the time I was struggling to work, I was struggling to walk outside, I was just really struggling. I had to rely on my husband to look after me in many ways. And I was just told by the doctors I had to live with it. They became quite hostile with me, trying to get any answers about why this had happened. And when the book was coming out, or just going through the processes, my main motivation for keeping going and not just pressing delete and saying to Vertebra, no, sorry, I don't want this out, was thinking about those chronically ill people. And now the numbers have sadly increased so much with long COVID sufferers, who such a crossover with ME and chronic fatigue. And so I really hope it gets to them, although Vertebra yeah. have got such a great reputation yeah. for adventurers and runners and climbers and all these sporty people. For me, I hope it brings some comfort and even hope for those that are chronically ill, because it's often so invisible. And we're given this kind of nature cure of just go outside yeah. and go for a walk. But if you're bed bound, you just can't do that. Like, it's not accessible. And I write about that. And I hope that the fact that I have been one of the lucky ones that recovers, I hope that gives people hope. But also, as I say, it's largely unedited and there's some really dark moments in there. And I hope that that brings comfort to those people, that they're not alone.
Is that the end of your writing, do you think? Or will you write again?
I am setting out to write, and it's like, it's not going to be personal. So I'm trying to do more writing that's not about me. So maybe it is going to be that guidebook.
Well, we shall see. Thanks very much for talking to me.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.